Thanks, Cheryl. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay, thanks. And that made me, Karen, I'm feeling much better. It's been 3 weeks now. I'm still coughing a little bit, which is shocking to me, actually. I've never really experienced something that's hung on this long. But I feel a ton better. I am back to walking and swimming every day, so that's a huge improvement. And I'm so glad to be feeling better. I did notice for sure when I was really down and sick. I was hardly practicing the loving all method. I was not loving it at all. I would be a total liar to say otherwise. Certainly, there was acceptance there because it is what it is, and it's not like I could deny it. It was, way too obvious, in a physical sense, as well as a total distraction, almost a total distraction from what felt like any connectivity to just being in awareness, of awareness. I was more in awareness and focused on the body, and how it was feeling and the rottenness of the situation. Yeah, so that was a time that, threw me for a loop for sure. But now that I'm on the up and up, so is my connection. And so hopefully one day I will still be able to experience, a sense of being down, whether it's physical or mental, and still know that I am the awareness that is observing that only, and that it's not me at all, that I stand beyond all that. And like you said, Anne, when you were talking about words, gosh, for a while now, I have been questioning in my own mind whether my I keep having thoughts that I just want to be silent, silent in the sanctuary, silent as much as possible around my home. And this week I'm fortunate because my husband is out of town, and so I do have the opportunity to be in total silence. And I really relish that time. I love that time. But words, I still get what you're saying at a point. It's like, what can I possibly say or share that hasn't been said or shared by, countless other people for, forever and ever and ever, amen. And it just makes me want to just shut up completely and step away from all of it, in the sense of, talking and sharing and being present here in the room and all of that. So I've definitely had some conflicting not really sure what to do with that. So I continue to ask, and just stay here right in the present moment, not worrying about what tomorrow might bring, as I come closer to the end of reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul. We're on page, I think I had it marked in two different places, so maybe Cheryl, you can confirm it for me. I had it marked on page 237 and 245, so I'm assuming it's 245 where I left off, but I could be wrong. And the reason I say that is because I'm wrong a lot. today's thought of awakening, which I did some contemplation about, that thought says, what is hate but the wish that what I see be different than the way I am seeing it? And I was struck by that. You know, what is hate? I mean, for me, hate is such a strong, it has such strong overtones to it. It has such a like heaviness, a heavy feeling to it. And to see that, you know, what is hate? Almost like a reinterpretation of hate for me. And it's the wish that what I see, whatever that might be, I want it to be different than the way I'm seeing it. If there's, you know, today on my walk, I saw, you know, a dead frog kind of flipped over on its back on the hot pavement. And I had that little stab of, you know, like, oh, you know, wanting it to be different than the way I'm seeing it. And reflecting that investment in the notion of physical form and death, you know, as if it's actually meaningful at all. But the quote goes on to say, good news, my brother, it is different. You know, what I'm seeing is different than the way I'm seeing it, if I'm seeing it through the eyes of the thinking mind, the eyes of the ego. The good news is that it's not that at all. It is different. And then it goes on to say, what I am seeing now is not what is true. And what is true is not how I am seeing it. I'm not seeing it truly at all when I'm looking through the eyes of the ego, when I'm listening to that secondary voice that seems to be primary with my attention placed on, you know, images of death, form as reality, any of that. It goes on to say, erase the ideas in the mind that tell me I know what I see. Look at all I believe to be facts about what I see and be willing to realize I am completely wrong about everything. I mean, that quote is just so helpful to me because my contemplation, I am completely wrong about everything. I have demonstrated that to myself many, many times. It's amazing anything works when this is the case for 7.5 billion of us. I don't know if that number's right, but I think it's fairly close to right. When this is the case for 7.5 billion of us collectively, being completely wrong about everything, that is. It is also an expression of divinity working as the undercurrent behind the scenes that appear in the world. You know, the fact that anything works, that anything, you know, my husband and I used to travel on the expressways in Southern California, there were many times when we would comment and say, it's amazing that more accidents don't happen with, you know, the distractions that go on with people looking at their phones and texting and, you know, just having conversation in general, or if the mind is lost in thought and you've gotten from point A to point G and you don't even know how you got there, you know, those kinds of things. It's amazing that anything works in this world as well as it works. But what I'm saying next is that this seeming working of it is also an expression of divinity working as the undercurrent behind the scenes that appear in the world. My only job is to tune into this undercurrent, to reside within its benevolence, being the willing partner who accepts what is assigned and listens intently for instruction. What stops this process? Being lost in thought, drifting into imagination, making up meaningless musings, and believing they have meaning. Having conversation with myself over a past incident or a future imagining, and giving any weight at all to that. Is there a someone forcing this to be the case? No. It is strictly a voluntary step, which is actually a misstep. It trips up happiness and peace, contentment and calm. And then what occurred to me after that was from A Course in Miracles, I rule my mind, which I alone must rule. And the piece from NTI John 19 that I wrote down was, I think, like the very last sentence or so. It said, "Let go of your acceptance of death. Do not see it as your truth. For if death is not your truth, something else must be, and that something else is me." And I found that just to be so comforting, so comforting. I was listening to you, Anne, talk about being in the meadow, and it made me think of that piece from The Circus in the Meadow, and asking, where is it that you reside? Are you in the circus of the mind? And I always imagine that, like swinging from the chandeliers, just with the insanity of thinking and trying to control situations, trying to manage my life, trying to figure things out, that mind that's really, 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 really busy, unless I'm vigilant, unless I'm vigilant. And so when you were talking about the tranquility of the meadow, where you're hanging with the cows and the quiet and just the bucolic scene of it all, and you hear, the bell or the or I think you said it was a bell or something, like a ringing that was like the call to show up, and how easily that secondary yet primary voice kicks in with, oh my God, I'm going to be late. And that, I when you said that, I had to acknowledge within myself I have an issue with lateness. I don't like to be late. And if I am late, it's like 5 minutes, and I don't like beat myself up for that or anything, but for me, it's always been like a sign of respect or a sign of that I also care about someone else's feelings, someone else's time, that I want to be a good steward of my time. For instance, if there's a dinner invitation, people spend a lot of time and preparation, and to show up an hour late, I just can't even fathom that. And I was married to a guy, my first husband, who was always late. And I'll use the word hate because I hated it. And so when you were talking, and it would have us, it would leave like a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach when we would show up late. Later on, it got to the point where I would just leave ahead of him. I was not going to tolerate. There was no reason for it. If there was a legitimate reason for his lateness, I could have maybe understood it, but there really was no reason for it at all. It was simply a lack of, in my opinion, care and concern for other people, and I didn't like that. I hated that. And so I took the matter in my own hands, and I left without him. And I did see him as bad for that. And I still hold that belief that deliberately being late, just because we don't manage our time properly or have any concern for the maybe the other party involved, I still see that as a belief that I hold. And a judgmental one at that. Now, in your situation, Anne, when you were talking about being in the meadow, it just didn't feel the same way. It was like that's where you should have been. I mean, because you were there. And that is a joyful time. That is that connection to divinity. That is that resting in the meadow, and that one tiny trigger. It's like, am I breaking the rules by not showing up on time? What if I just played hooky and stayed here in the meadow? That's how my mind kind of works, because I'm not oftentimes my you're not the boss of me. That's one of my favorite sayings. You're not the boss of me. You can't tell me what to do. Another one of my beliefs that brings me a lot of grief. Yet I still somehow freaking love that. You're not the boss of me. You can't tell me what to do. I can exercise free will. But I recognize the suffering that goes with that sometimes as well. Yeah. Okay, so with that being said, enough of the yakking. I would like to get to experience your perfect soul. And we have been reading from chapter 7, which is the last chapter in this book, and it's Elise Morgan. And so I think, Cheryl, you said, let me scroll up for just a second, that I had left off on 237. Is that right? Yeah, I don't know. Did I miss that? 237, is that what you said? I'm not seeing it. Oh yeah, you left off at page 237. Okay, yeah. Okay. So I'm going to start in the middle of the page, which is a new section. Let me grab a quick drink of my sun tea. And this is called The Mantle of Faith. Faith opens doors that have remained closed. Latent pride dissolves in the heart of faith. Do not hold to past mistakes. When you receive remittance, you are allowed to begin a fresh life, a life of joy, Joy born in the mantle of faith makes glad the heavy-hearted. Know now, this day, that when you call on one power, one life, one love, you are calling the all-pervading spirit into your conscious world. Time alone, time apart is essential if you would receive me. Again, time alone, time apart is essential if you would receive me. And back to John 19 quickly again. Let go of your acceptance of death. Do not see it as your truth. For if death is not your truth, something else must be. And that something else is me. Time alone, time apart is essential if you would receive me. Look unto me. The light of your soul and be free. Do not look to the right or left. Go directly to your goal. And go directly to your goal. I like that idea very much. And just some commentary from my own experience. For many, many, many years, I was primarily a student of A Course in Miracles. And in reflection of that time, which I'm very grateful for, yet glad to have kind of released the dogma, the dogmatic position that I had noticed very late into being in love with that practice. It was necessary to let it go. And one of the frustrations that I had noticed just prior to letting it go was I just was sick of the idea of the ego. I was sick of talking about the ego, sick of, looking at the dynamics of the ego. The ego seemed to be the goal, learning about that, the operations of that imposter self, which, clearly is very, very important to be aware, because it's a trick, a trickster. It's very much on top of things in trying to maintain its false predominance in the false mind. Yet I had so noticed a I just didn't want to talk about it anymore. I just did not want to talk about the ego anymore or boost it any more than I felt I was already doing, just in living a normal human life. And so when this says, don't look to the right or left, just go directly to your goal, my aspiration for a bit now has been to know, viscerally in direct experience, my true self, not just in, little snippets of here and there, but consistently. And consistency had been the my other aspiration, and it still is. I'm still working on the consistency piece of it. Still finding myself distracted, falling into a depression, and having thoughts of just wanting to chuck all this stuff. I had to laugh because yesterday when I was in the pool, I was doing laps, and there was a couple and another gal, and they were just standing there in the water, kind of conversing and talking about what they believe. And he was saying that he's an atheist, and expounding upon what heaven is. And I don't know what people think heaven is. I mean, what do? Go up to heaven, and what? There's like, you go out for dinner in the evening, and there's like a buffet, and you kind of run into your dead parents, and like what? You're gonna be happy to see them? Maybe you're not even gonna be happy to see them. And so they were and so he's decided that death is really nothing more than your best sleep ever. Where now when we wake up from a nighttime sleep, and you have that really sound, comfortable, restful kind of sleep. He says that that's what happens. You just go to sleep, and you have the best sleep ever, and that's it. And he was talking about his parents, how they were Catholic, and when he and his wife went to some sort of alternative church early on in their marriage, the parents would say, "Well, that doesn't count." And so, and when you get to heaven, if you do, you're going to be in a different part of heaven than I'm going to be in, because you're just not doing it right. And he was talking this, and they were talking about just how everybody's divergent ideas around what heaven is, what God is, or whether God even exists. I mean, I listened to the conversation, and it made me giggle inside, but it also reflected, like I say, my own moments where I still question all of this. It's still awareness, watching awareness still feels foreign, not like the well-worn shoe. And I'm just acknowledging that. But it is how I do go directly to the goal. So whether it is something that I'm experiencing in a very direct or profound sort of a way, I don't know what it is with me, but I just have this tenacity to keep going no matter what, no matter how down I get, no matter how depressed I get, no matter how sick I get, there is still that spark that refuses to give up. And I'm grateful for that. So do not look to the right or left. Go directly to your goal. And my goal, as I said, is to know viscerally, in direct experience, my true self always. Your mind must be clear, crystal clear. Your heart steadfast, serene, unruffled. And as I've shared with you guys, when I was sick for, almost 3 weeks, my mind was not clear at all. My heart was not steadfast. It was still somewhat willing, more like that, tiny little spark that, one little puff of air and it would have been out. So that's not very steadfast. Serene, I wasn't serene. Unruffled, unruffled in the sense that I don't get sick very often. So that was kind of a shock to have it come with such tenacity. Yeah. So, but this is saying, to go directly to your goal, your mind must be clear, crystal clear. Your heart steadfast, serene, unruffled. Be faith-filled day and night. Sleep and rest content, knowing I am ever with you, ever in you, day and night. I just want to read that one more time. Be faith-filled day and night. Sleep and rest content, knowing I am ever with you, ever in you, day and night. I've been forgetting before I go to sleep. Some days, not every day, but forgetting here and there to give over my nighttime time, my sleeping time, for intuition. I've often kind of pondered how much time is spent, with my eyes closed in bed. And what an opportunity that could be to listen. I mean, there are no words being spoken from the mouth when you're sleeping, or at least not that I'm aware of from my mouth. I don't talk in my sleep that I'm aware of. I rarely dream that I'm, that I can recall. But what a canvas, an empty canvas. What a time, a huge plot of time that could be dedicated in a very worshipful way, given over for healing, for intuition, inspiration. Whatever. I mean, yeah. And this is saying very assuredly that I'm ever with you, ever in you, day and night. In the morning when I wake up, I usually say the prayer from A Course in Miracles, be in my mind, my Father, when I wake, and shine on me all through the day today. Let every minute be a time in which I dwell with you. And let me not forget my hourly thanksgiving that you have remained with me and always will be there to hear my call to you and answer me. As evening comes, let all my thoughts be still of you and of your love. And let me sleep, sure of my safety, certain of your care, and happily aware that I am your daughter. And so that's a great way for me to start my day to give the intention to remember my mantra or my purpose, or to be asking, what is this for? To give my time over to paying attention, looking inward rather than outward, all of that. But I feel like I want to recommit on a on an even deeper level with this nighttime thing. Yeah. There is no separateness, no apartness in me. The pathway is free, joyous. Be joyous at every new turn and see the indwelling light coming forth. Awaken this day to your living, breathing self. I like the way that's worded because it encompasses the human aspect as well as the divine, capital S self. Awaken this day to your living, breathing self. And one of the things, it's always amazing to me how all of this stuff ties in. This morning, when we were reading from chapter 18 in A Course of Love, in a section called Observation, it talked about expressing who you are in physical form. And that expression is something that, at least I know for myself, while I was at least studying A Course in Miracles, and this is just my own misguided way of interpreting it, but the body was not really embraced so much in my mind. There was more of, an association that it was just not such a great thing. And one of the things that I love most about it, A Course of Love, is the idea of the integration of both the human aspect as well as the divine aspect. And it reflected also that lesson that I spoke to you earlier, our thought of awakening. And if I could just read from it for a minute, it says, and it's on page 333. Huh. Yeah. A mind and heart joined in unity observes the truth, where once a mind and heart separated by illusion observed illusion. It will seem at first as if you are asked to deny the facts that you see before you in order to observe something other than what is there, just like our lesson for today. You must constantly remember that your observation is now an act of worship and of devotion, and that you are called to observe the truth rather than illusion. No matter how real illusion may still seem to be. In this way, you will join the mechanisms of your physical form to the new thought system of the truth. Your body, as has been often said, is a neutral form that will serve you in the manner in which you choose to have it serve you. It has always been led by your thought system. If it is no longer instructed by the thought system of illusion, it is natural to realize that it will now be instructed by the thought system of the truth. Thus, your eyes will learn to observe only the truth, even unto seeing what before but seemed unobservable. We also now link observance and ideas. Ideas form in the mind. I got kicked out of the room for a second there, so I'll start with it. This is the last paragraph. Can you guys hear me? Okay, cool. Let's see. Okay, so I left off where it said, thus your eyes, your physical eyes, doesn't say spiritualize. It's talking about, the mechanisms of your physical form coming to the new thought system of truth. But it says, thus your eyes will learn to observe only the truth. And this makes me think of A Course in Miracles, where it tells us, look beyond the mistake, look beyond the error. Seeing it with your physical eyes, it's, you're hearing the words or you're noticing the action, but your thinking is so centered in self that you're looking beyond the mistake and observing really the truth. The truth being that it's a call for love, the truth being who they really are in truth. But this, then it goes on to say, even unto seeing what before but seemed unobservable. So that to me says there's going to be some sort of a sense feeling, a knowing. To the willingness to be in that thought system of truth rather than illusion. Okay, so then it says, we also now link observance and ideas. Ideas form in the mind. You are used to thinking that what you observe forms outside of your mind. This is the thinking of the ego thought system. The thought system of the truth realizes that the external world is just a reflection of the internal world. Thus, you can observe with your eyes closed as easily as you can observe with your eyes open. You can observe by having an idea of another's health, abundance, peace, and happiness. You can observe this within yourself because it exists within yourself. What exists within you is shared by all. This is the relationship of the truth that unites all things and that must now become observable. And so, going back to experience your perfect soul, awaken this day to your living, breathing, capital S self. Know that the divine is all powerful and it rests with man to gain his own eternal self. Obey your inner call. Watch truth, not evil. Watch love, not condemnation. Watch the divine self, not the earthborn, fear-filled, incomplete expression. That's such an important paragraph. Starts with obey, goes to watch, watch, watch. Obey your inner call. Not, the call of the wild, which is everything external. The call that, bumps us off the track, the call that leads nowhere, the call that feels well worn, the call that seems more, I'm going to say, normal, the call that's really loud. The call that never seems to shut up. This is telling us obey your inner call. Turn away from that noisy mind, which isn't even you, by the way. You are the awareness behind it. But where are you placing your attention? in the circus or in the meadow. So if there's, any sense of urgency about time, it could best be used by turning my attention as soon as I notice, maybe I'm lost in thought for a while, as I've noticed myself over the last 3 weeks, certainly lost in thought way more than I had been for quite some time. So it was a little unnerving. And I found myself judging myself for that, being disappointed that after all this frickin' time, yeah, that voice. It's saying, obey your inner call, not that voice. Watch truth, not evil. Watch love, not condemnation. Watch the divine self, not the earthborn, fear-filled, incomplete expression. Work in stillness. I love that. Work in stillness. I love to work in the garden. And so, like a piece of my heart's been missing, not being in our home yet, another couple months. It's just such a passion of mine, and brings such an opportunity to work in stillness. I'm very, very dedicated to giving love to all my plants and my roses and my cactus and every living thing. And so people would often comment, because I lived on a corner. And so, with my butt was up in the air a lot. people would say, you're always working in your yard. Don't you get sick of that? Or you're always working. And it wasn't work to me. It was joyful. I felt, the breeze on my cheeks. I felt the sun on my back. I had the dirt under my fingernails. I pruned the dead leaves away. I talked to the roses. I, conversed with whoever went by. I heard the birds sing. I saw the bright light. It was all magical. It was a work of love, and that's, I think, what makes all the difference. Where is the heart space in whatever time we're spending working, whether it's gardening or baking peanut butter cookies, or where's my heart? What's the purpose in what I'm doing? Am I working in stillness or out of a sense of, duty or obligation or need or all of that, which Jesus can just so make a work day miserable. And so this notion of working in stillness is, to me, that turning inward as you work. I mean, even though the attention might be placed on a task or on using the mind to do some sort of figuring, it's still centered in the heart. There's not this anxiety going on, or, talking about being just totally stressed out all the time. I hear that so often. I'm so stressed out. almost like it's something to brag about, and how it seems there's a complacency to see the problem is outside of ourself and blame the situation or the job or the task or something else rather than my distraction from stillness while working. So yeah, work and stillness is a lovely three words. Lessening thoughts, lessening speech brings an awareness of life, reality. The way is open when you are still. Again, the way is open when you are still. I'm going to read from, let's see, one of my thoughts of awakening from last week. And hang on just a second. No, that's not the right one. I gotta go back a little bit, guys. Here I am trying. Oh, yeah, here it is. This was from Thought of Awakening number 100. It says, your heart is open to the love of God. Your mind is closed when it busies itself with thinking and defining, deciding, and ideas. Leave the mind open by listening to the heart. It speaks too, although its voice is quieter. And it does not use words. The mind can put words to the message of the heart. When it does this, the mind is not thinking, it is listening. And so my contemplation of that was the mind is open when it's listening. Closed when it's busy. The mind is open when it's quiet. Closed when it's noisy. The mind is receptive in I don't know mode. Closed when it already assumes a former stance. The mind is inviting in emptiness. Closed when it's full up from any past reference point. The heart is wordless, hushed, humbled in love, as love. Hear the heart voice as an inner sense of calm and composure. No beehive of activity, no buzzing for control, no scrambling motion, no need to do. Rest in the sweet nectar of inactivity. You are the queen. Be served. Quietly, restfully, given over in surrender to whatever this present moment delivers, it will be sweet. And so that reminded me, with what I just read, lessening thoughts, lessening speech brings an awareness of life, reality. The way is open when you are still. Increasing love, increasing joy deepens the sense of divine security. The sense of divine security. You know, that word security is such a trigger, generally for me, affiliated with external forms of security. So to reflect on divine security, knowing that it's the only security that is true, that comes through increasing love, in increasing joy. And so the shift from an external sense of security, which is not security at all, that's the imposter security, to that sense of divine security. The only responsibility on my part is increase the love and increase the joy. And how do I do that? By turning inward to where it exists within the heart and connecting with that. So I'll just finish this page. It's just a couple short paragraphs. Beloved, living in me will relieve you from all sense of strain. Hallelujah. You are too sudden, too emotional. Dwell on steadfastness of purpose and repeat, I will remain still, centered in love, honest in my love, with no fear. One more time. You are too sudden, too emotional. Dwell on steadfastness of purpose and repeat, I'll remain still, centered in love, honest in my love, with no fear. And I'm ending there, which is on page 239. And I'll see you guys next week. I'm going to hang out in the room for a while. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Giving up the mic.